3.6 million. Unemployed, 332,000, 9.3%.
They're healthy.
a group of men that have by war, they've been made out to be animals, and they can't be trusted. They're likely to lurk around and kill somebody. They're dope fiends. Just wrong. It's not true. There are some. But if they had never gone, there would have been a lot of them in that very same thing. And I just hope that never miss that opportunity to say that, apart from your other defend our guys.
You're so right. And I tell you, the veteran and his quality and his employability and the necessity he employed is now affecting you. That is a great age just right. So this is why it's timely that now we've got 200 cities of over 10,000 with active task forces organized and leading citizens in the community. Only the dedicated to finding jobs for veterans. And every city is involved. County one of the states have active task forces. So that this is just the right moment for John and his great organization to come in and capitalize on this sentiment and help it grow and work with us. And we are going to redouble our efforts on the publicity and promotional side and the educational side. And I want to say just this. One of the very unfortunate facts is that you added to the NAB program, which is the focus of today's test, these other things that we've been talking about for some time, like the listing of the contract employment opportunities, like the extension of the transition, like the clearing up the GI on the job bill training. So they're all part of this picture. And this nation is going to come through on this issue.
We're agreeing now as we move into the summer and move up on the employment side. So hope you're impressed and that's your thought on something. Mel, how do you feel about it? He's the man that really alerted us to this problem long before it happened. He pointed out as we went on our withdrawal program before the 70 elections, he said, you realize there are going to be over a million men in the 70 elections that are going to be let out of the armed services and the defense plans. So I, President, I think your program has been a work. I think it's very important now. I think one of the things, the question of attitude, the way these people are being accepted back in their community, and we've got to raise the sights of not only business and other people and communities to the contribution these people have made. We owe them something.
Oh, boy.
And
I say we owe them something.
One of the things we owe them is to try to build something out of this afterwards, other than simply, well, we'll wash our hands, boys, and let the communists take over Asia.
Yeah.
If we do that, we will betray them and the country.
Yeah. Well, one other point I'd like to make on my own, President, I think that right now the press has been blinded. Tonight, which might I'm sure you want to question about, is your program falling flat because it's not good?
Sure.
Well, if it isn't falling flat, we put 700,000 people working in the last 3 years, and we're going to expand our goals for this next year. So I think that my feeling is, and I'm told that these people are following this, that we're taking a very positive approach to the press and to the budget. This thing is working. Sure, there are problems. We're going to be asked about the drug problem. Well, there's a drug problem with some of the hardcore unemployed. God knows that we've been putting to work. So that,
oh, you have the drug problem. I interrupt you. This is a very delicate thing to mention. But among drug users, 48% are unemployed.
And
52%. This is the whole society. So basically, it is still, while it is moving to the unemployed areas, it is still primarily. It has enormously more impact on the non-employment.
Well, my reaction is, instead of getting into a detailed argument about the drug problems, I'm just saying if there weren't problems, there wouldn't be interest to do this job.
Good.
If there's no problem, run along.
You folks both sound like you're successful business executives.
Right, Mark? You know, President, what these two organizations are doing, particularly now over the last 3 years, is a tremendous job.
I know.
And it's just too bad that we have the haters and fellows like that who will never give business credit for doing anything.
This means our being easy.
You know,
Steve,
hard core program is 2 years old, and we're 3 years away from the original excitement shot.
Yeah.
And just keeping the momentum of interest of 3,000 to 4,000 businessmen and their bosses up is difficult. And they really welcome this new challenge.
Well, Bill, the SEC is just going to use some new stipulation, and this is it.
Yes, they need it. They want it.
I think this is it, but I just like to tell you one thing. I have yet to call any businessman in this country and ask him to do something, or give us a man, or do something himself, and get turned down except for perfectly good cause, you can understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all over the country, and there are very few businesses that I don't call.
You know, it's an interesting thing. We talk about our system and the rest of it. I think the American people are really in a way as to one of our, it's been a national trait from the beginning. We're suckers for idealistic causes. When I say suckers, I say with a great commendation. I mean, you can call people, I mean, you know, let's help the people that are starving in Ghana. I remember when I went to Sunday school as a kid, we were putting pennies in the box for it. Yes, you know, it was in Alaska and for the Indians in Guatemala. Friends for help. And that's done, and that's multiplied 100 times over in other areas now. That gives them, but here's, you take the business community. The business community, who are the businessmen in this country? Well, there are people that have gone to colleges, universities, probably to business schools, and the rest of them have come up in other ways. They're married, they have families, they have kids, and the rest. They're idealistic. Sure, they got to meet their boards of directors, the chief executives, and they got to show a product. Also, they care very much about what happens to the country, and they just don't want to come this way and contribute nothing to it. Some people say, well, it's good business to be involved in the community. Yeah, sure, that's true. But also, they want to do it because it's right. Same is true of so many other areas. I spoke to the AMA yesterday, and I said, now look, I agree at a nerve center with some of these guys because they've been responsible to a great extent, some doctors, for being too permissive with regard to over-prescribing drugs. As a result, they contribute to the drug culture. And one, you've got to get at the problem of stopping over-prescribing. And second, we need, I ask, the help of the doctors of this country who will have more influence than anybody else in informing young Americans as to the dangers of drugs. Because when a doctor comes in and tells you, much better than a preacher does or a politician, but it's dangerous to do this, to that, and the other thing, you scare them. Also, you say, look, you're going to destroy your body, you're going to destroy your mind, don't do that. And he puts it on that basis, make you listen. And I said, you have none of this. And you fellows say that you're pretty busy in your own professions, but otherwise we're going to lose a whole generation of drugs. So what happens? Well, the head of the organization says, we accept the challenge. They're going to call it Project USA, and 200,000 members of the AMA, and a lot of other doctors are going to go out and start doing what they should have done long ago, alerting the American people that drugs, of course, can either be as they are and have been in many areas, that they can save life, they can cure, or they can destroy it. And in the doctor's hands, and this is what I told them, in your hands may be the future of the country now. So they respond, businessmen respond. You meet with some labor leaders, you know. These guys, sure, we will argue with them about this or that or the other thing, but when you really lay it on the line in terms of the good of the country and the rest, they want to help out. You visited a very cooperative investment.
Yeah, they
are. Very cooperative.
Good.
So did you have any report on public service? I understand they have amended that.
Yes, they
could be hopeful.
They've got that down to a point, I think, where I'm going to be prepared to recommend that we go on that one, because if they've got it on a transitional basis that we wanted, then they've committed to reporting out a comprehensive manpower reform bill by the end of the year.
Yeah.
We were afraid that all they were trying to do was put this sort of thing through and then forget about it.
guys are kind of on edge, because they've gone out there and they spent 18 months or 2 years, 2 years usually, which draw 14 months from Vietnam. So they come back, they come out of the service. And here's the other guy that didn't go for a variety. He was lucky on his number, he was lucky on his deferment, he was lucky he kept in college. He was lucky he had parents that were smart enough to know, and he was smart enough to know how to avoid it legally, but he had every right to. So these guys said, but by God, when this veteran comes back, he is entitled to an edge over everybody else. And I want to see that he gets the edge. And that means veteran. That doesn't mean, that means all veterans, black veterans, white veterans, and the rest. And he should have an edge over it. Let me put it quite directly to you. The black veteran should have an edge over the non, over the black non-veteran.
Right.
And the black veteran should have an edge over the white non-veteran. And the white veteran should have an edge over the black non-veterans. Now, usually you will find most of the blacks have been in, because, you know, they didn't have the wherewithal, the education and the rest to avoid it. So you have to have your profit. But let's not have any nonsense of it. We really want to give the veterans an edge. And it's the right thing to do.
Thank you.
Will you please help us when you can?
Hold it there.
Just say it, because the more publicity we get, the more we publicize.
Whatever you want, whatever you need publicity, you pass the word to us here at the White House, and I'll do it.
Now, someday, let us know.
You might say that no nation has any pretense to greatness. You can be the absent citizens and sensitive. Particularly if they're uneducated.
I said, I remember that. Good.
I agree. That's very well.
The last six bodies that have been materialized.
I thought you said read the mind, but to the mouth, but your inner circle of judgment is all. So to a newsman, a 45-minute conversation with a newsman, you will not indicate it is its task, it is a source.
It is not a task.
No, no task. No.
Now, he's our director. He's in a towering rage on the release of the Pentagon Papers. He puts Bobby Kennedy behind the McNamara Decision Commission report. He says he will not attend any Democratic convention for presidential nominations. Then we get into some quotes. I won't go. The lefties, the creeps, all our bastard friends of Rick Blocks a convention procedure. They hate me. They always have. We also see what that silly son of a bitch McGovern's been doing and what he's been saying. The fact that I won't go to a convention won't bother the bastards. What will bother them is what they won't really know. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to beat the dirty, rotten sons of bitches in 1972. You can bet on that. I'm afraid that Nixon will have to move faster on his program to get us out of Vietnam. That's the way I see it. I don't think he has any other option now that this crap is out. The bastards are trying to kill the country. They don't give a damn. We have to find a common, unifying way to beat their heads to a pulp. Then, on Clark Clifford, he says, down in Austin at the library exercises, the silly motherfucker hid behind the trees to I know who stays my friend and who doesn't. Then back to the Democratic conventions, he says, there won't be a convention, it'll be a goddamn zoo. I've also got a quote from Gail McGee, which is pretty interesting. She's the same source. He expresses his disgust with the revelations. His disgust with colleagues like McGovern, Mansfield, and Fulbright is even sharper. Then, quote, I think all this business makes it just about certain that we will have two Democratic candidates for president. There will be one for the super doves and one for regular Democrats. Who for the regulars? The last few days, an interesting combination has been drifting around, Scoop Jackson and Wilbur Mills. Even if that doesn't come off, my guess is that Nixon will have a much easier time in 1972 than he did before. I won't support any dove, I'll tell you that, and I'll bet Scoop won't either. There are lots of people. What would he do then? Support the state candidates who aren't McGovern Kennedy types and keep my mouth shut noticeably on a so-called national ticket. But I do believe there will be an anti-dove ticket too on a national basis.
Never know. It's all over.
No, but that's their feeling now.
They're feeling now, and we got to keep it going. Now, Mel, it seems to me one thing you would do. I think you want to give Johnson a call. I'm just thinking out loud here. Nobody has called, but Henry has talked to Roscoe. Okay. But you should just call him and say, Mr. President, just say, we just ought to know this, that the President, you and I were chatting, and it's you and I, but I expressed great concern about this thing. I am disgusted with the whole business, that we're fighting it right to the last, and of course, that I told Mansfield this morning that under absolutely no circumstances would I turn over these papers if there was any thought whatever of having, of inviting Johnson, even by invitation to come, that no president should ever appear, that if you were invited, I would publicly state that he should not come. And Mansfield said he's reading that position. And that a little of that, and as far as we're concerned, Mr. President, we're doing the best we can. And I also told Mike that if they had hearings, they voted, that they fought to present both sides, and that this was a one-sided thing that had been presented. I think just a little of that would be good for Chubot, for him to hear. And if you hear it directly from you, you can say that we're going to see to it that this thing is done enough. The President has refused to play politics in this damn thing. You have refused to play politics. But as you know, Mel, I think that helps damn big equilibrium. I think if you could tell them, you could say that we had a talk and that we can, of course, control some of our partisans. We got a few. But that we are come on in, Henry. All right.
Paris.
know you understand, but I think you're going over there for the negotiations.
Yeah, I think it is.
How was Fred, how did he feel?
He says he spent so much doing it, he's gonna stop shuttling.
Really? Did he say that? He's gonna want to start shuttling?
He's almost did, I don't know, he's deciding, so.
Yeah. Well, this is fine, you go ahead and handle your call. I've asked Mel to just call him and say that we are, what the policy of the defense department has been and will be, and we're gonna do the best we can to fight this, but the damn thing is out of our hands pretty much. But I think he's just, do you think he'll appreciate that from Mel? His own secretaries in advance, both of them are rat. Both of them. Okay, well, we'll do that. But before you go, I just put your state, put your head in.
You are not leaving.
What? You are?
No, yes.
Yeah, you are. Well, I can get it.
That's just one thing.
Alright. Well, come in here just a second, so that because he is not here. Sit down, John, and you fill in Mel, and I'll come back in.
Scott can help with in terms of defining the objectives of the
job. Yeah, we've got to make damn sure that
because
I don't want to be the principal witness out there and not have any of these other attitudes that sometimes.
Well, of course, that's something that we don't have any control over down here, as you know. But the statement is kind of a joint communique. Nancy will approve that. He has a copy of it. Deposited. And I told him about our conversation where you said there were these two areas and one was better than the other. He said, I'm not so sure that it would be a good idea to put it in the custody of either one of those committees. He said, maybe Albert and Scott Ford and I can work out some other way of storing this stuff. And I said, well, you and Secretary Leonard can work that out.
Yeah.
No, he's aboard.
Yesterday, he had some questions.
Yeah, no, he's
okay.
He's okay on that.
Okay.
That's just a copy of it, I guess.
We have a copy.
Yeah. But let me keep the original and then copy it from you.
I don't like
it. Oh, I didn't do it.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, now it's all right to meet with, what about this meeting with,
Albert?
Albert.
Mansfield.
Yeah, I didn't call Albert. I let Bill
know. That was discussed this morning. And, Mansfield said, well, I'd like to have a meeting with Albert first to be able to set the, pattern up there. So I called the speaker and told him Mansfield would be getting it. He said that was fine. He said, logistically, how is this going to work? And I said, well, that's something that after you've had your meeting with Mansfield that I think will work out with Secretary of Defense.
Well, I have all the copies now. I've got 10 sets now. I picked up these.
Good.
I haven't picked up copies.
I don't think you'll get Johnson's set to be perfectly correct.
Well, they can't make sense in their house, you know. I really don't make sense in their house.
I know. We told them. The smart ones.
We said it. Cover.
We've talked a little about logistics and so on.
Well, how does the thing now, how is it lined up? Is Mansfield clear?
Mansfield's clear. Albert's clear. Mansfield knows Ford's not available. Scott's gone.
For Ford. You represent Ford, then, will you? He speaks for Ford.
I've got a call in for Ford. He was off with his wife someplace this morning and it'll be available at noon. And I'll give him a cut on this.
Well, call on him. Mel, would you then vouch for Ford and say that you approve this procedure?
Sure.
And tell Jerry that you were here and it's all right for him. Maybe you could do this. Maybe Mel could call us. How would that be?
I'm going out there right now.
Okay.
Fine. All right. You cover it on the Republican side so they know we tried to cover it. Now, let me say this. Should the Senate be covered on this announcement? For all God.
Yeah, Senate should know about it.
He's fought our battle. All right. You should Mel call in?
Yes, I think
you call. You tell him that the President wants to know, and I don't. Incidentally, I recommend it to Mansfield that Senate be made the chairman of the Select Committee. I said, you can't be Fulbright as the chairman of the committee. And he says, yeah, I think Bill knows that. I said, Stennis is the judge. The fact that he's not on the other, that he leans the other way means he's going to be more fair. He's responsible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Stennis, you know, he has to hold his hand almost every day.
I don't.
He's done for 7 weeks with the draft bill.
He drafted
him. He's about a punch.
He might very well decline it if it were offered to him because he's complaining about it.
He really
it.
Is pushy right now.
Yeah.
I got a wonderful job. Well, now, the other thing is, if I were you, I'd give Johnson a call this afternoon. Right. You got a chance to just say that you know that Henry had called him this morning because Henry just had a brief talk with him just to tell him that apparently that this Mansfield thing would come up. But that you call him and say, now look, that you want to follow up on the other calls and then say, we just standing firm. We're having a hell of a time. Mr. Pickett, I'll give him a little of that.
I think it's important for him to understand that the tactic here is to keep this away from the kooks in the Congress.
That's right. Tell him that we're trying to get it to responsible people. Keep it away from them. From them us. That we've had requests from the McGoverns and the Symington's and the McCloskeys and all the rest. And that I have put the responsibility directly on the leadership for these documents, and I've told them that I've had an assurance that we're going to have a responsible committee. Now, and incidentally, that I said not Fulbright for chairman. Now tell him that.
All right. And Ron will be going with us at 11. So
not
thereabouts.
No, about 30 minutes.
Right. A little late this one.
What about this idea, John? Because we got to sort of keep this from that. Now, I don't want either Mel or Bill to go down and testify before any damn select committee on the conduct of the war. How do we parse?
Well, we'll have to refuse, I think. That's about the only way we can stop it, because they'll want to turn into, well, what you're doing now.
Yeah.
And that's the way they'll want to turn
all that involves current operations.
I would think the sooner we start making that clear to them, the better.
That we will
you get around
to talking about operations because it would endanger American men and so forth and so on. And plans that we have to withdraw.
I'm just going to try to stand the fact that I'm not interested in getting into the debate on the past.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. This is that. Frankly, I could say, really, this is this is really a debate between people who were in the two previous administrations. It does not involve us. We were not here. We had nothing to do with it. And let them watch their dinner in public if they want.
Okay, we've got that in here. Since the documents relate to the Johnson-Kennedy period, the President pointed out he is not in a position to vouch for the accuracy or completeness of the documents. And you keep trying to push it back.
They're going to try and cheat.
I know they are.
They can't can't vote in Laos, yeah, so as they can.
Yeah, Mansfield raised that this morning. He said, you know, the Symington subcommittee is very unhappy about the Laos and so on.
You see, when I was up there last week, they asked me a series of questions on this Symington did about when I'd be ready to turn over the classified documents to the committee that I'd refused for 24 months because they wanted to start their hearings on what corrections we made based on these documents.
And what the hell? What corrections you made? Rather than 300 when we came in. The number of Americans is 200,000 rather than 550,000. What the hell else do they want? That's a correction, isn't it? That's what we should
say.
That's right. What do you think they should have, Ken? You mean they want to find out what went on in Cambodia?
Well,
is to press on Laos. Well, okay, you may be available. Now, I've got something better for them. Now, you put this up. This can go out. The Cuban Missile Confrontation. The Bay of Pigs. The Pearl Harbor classified documents, those that have not yet been made available. And the Korean War documents. All of these have been requested by various newspaper reporters. Understand? And of course, these are matters that just will have to be considered as properly planned. Now they want to open this box. Now it's all their war, every damn one. And there isn't a thing in there that involves any of us. So let's let them have it.
Now this can turn into a political plus, although we didn't plan it this way. It can turn that way.
Yeah. Mel, I'll tell you what I want you to do. You're really the guy that we got to count on to handle this thing in a skillful way. And you and John would work closely in tandem on it, because John will get the heat from from Sage and from the Congress and all the rest. But I just don't let them play the White House against you.
No, I
don't. And against state. Now, the state people will want to leave, give them out too much. Now, that we must do it. I think playing the hard line is good. Give them a hell of a lot of crap. Believe me, stand and fight like a tiger for anything. And to the extent that you can get across with that Admiral Gaylord, what's his name?
Tiger. No,
Tiger. Listen, that is terrific stuff. That it breaks the code, gives it information.
Well, of course, we got to be careful how we talk about that. I can do that privately, maybe with a few people, but you've got to be awful careful about that.
Well, all right. Then you could simply say this. Make the statement to the effect that this compromises our intelligence gathering information, and it would seriously jeopardize American forces.
But we've gone through those documents, and really only about 2% of the stuff passed it.
Yeah, okay. Have fun. We'll see you Monday night.
What's your best guess on time? When do you think you'll be done with this?
Well, it last thing we ever do, a week, do that awful fast, but I didn't want to do it too fast, sir.
No, but I mean, just within
the ritual, they use in court 45 days, and I always have pressure to go on.
Let me say this. What I did. I do it faster. I get it going just as soon as the committee is ready. I don't want them to think we're holding it up. But as far as the declassification is concerned, give them enough to start their hearings within 3 weeks if you can. Get the damn thing started.
We can get our job done in a very rapid way.
Now, the next issue that I think they might raise, the Rick Eric, is, well, we're delayed 45 days and all that. I think you should say, I think it would be very well if you should say we're already ready with half of the documents or something like that. Or what do you think, John? Is that a good thing?
Well, maybe we better lock some people up right now. And just you can say that we're locking people up over there in front, that this is underway, that the secretary's instructed